Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, all across the country. We are a network. It is good. Today I'm on the phone with Mike Bowman from Groundswell Sea Farm in Maine. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hello. So I wanted to start out by asking you a little bit about where your farm is in Maine, and if you could describe the young farmer scene that's going on in the proud state of Maine.
Sure. Where our farm is in Solon, Maine, which is central Maine. We're probably an hour and a half from the coast. I grew up here in the town next door in Cornville. And I went away, went to college for sustainable agriculture at the University of Maine in Orono, and worked on several farms in state. And I have traveled out of state, and I find myself back here starting our seed farm.
So central Maine is much more affordable than coastal Maine, also not a bad idea, and you're being from there. What's the growing climate there?
Oh, it's getting better every year with the global warming and everything. I think we're zone 4, so we have a good number of days between frosts. I don't know.
What we were going to talk about is the kind of landscape around where you are and kind of more broadly in Maine, and then maybe why you decided to choose seed farming.
Okay. Let me see if I can do that justice, because I've just been at the grindstone mainly for the past 5 years. Trying to build up a farm. So I don't get out that much. So I'm kind of a recluse worker on the ground of organics. So I'm kind of at a loss there to describe what the...
Well, that's fine. You can talk about your own grindstone if you want. Talk about your business.
Okay, sure. We came back to Maine in 2007. And we were desperately trying to just buy a place. But then we soon found out that wasn't a good option. So we decided to join arms with family and try to give it a go. And we've been working on the farm ever since. And for us, I guess I've always felt kind of a clash between industrial organic and local organic. And I probably don't want to get into this too much, but from what I understand, if you have a large, large farm, it's really hard to do a monocrop large farm organic. And our philosophy with organics is more of an agro-ecosystem approach. We are trying to develop enterprises that work with each other and kind of feed off each other. So, for instance, we have we have pigs, and a lot of our vegetable waste will go right to the pigs. And in turn, their manure goes into the soil to provide fertility for our crops. So it's a nice cycle to be a part of. And that's where I get a lot of inspiration, is the cycle of life, you know, biology over money. So we thought seed would be a good way to continue that cycle. And
so I like this theme. I like this theme very much of biology triumphing over money. I feel like at the end of the day, biology will triumph over money, though we're in the middle of a pretty intense part of that narrative. Tell us a little bit about the seed, the organic seed business.
Okay, so we grow on a total of 7 acres, and a third of that is for wholesale vegetable produce, and two-thirds of it is for seed. And that two-thirds, there's a portion where we grow wholesale seed crops for other seed companies. And we also grow seed for our seed catalog, which is in its second season now. We're pretty excited.
So in a little bit of a way, you're kind of like the people who start up shipping milk to a processor while they're building their milk room and their yogurt, buying up their yogurt equipment so they can sell their own home brand. Is that working for you?
Yeah, it's kind of working. We're still in the middle of it, so it's hard to tell where we're at so far. We still need to do the books for this last year, so, you know. I think it's working, though. It's giving some cash flow in the moment, and then the seed crops are nice because if they were grown well and saved well, it's not such a perishable product. So in that sense, it's really good.
Are you focusing on varieties that are unique to Maine or adapted to Maine growing or for smaller scale growers, or do you have some kind of a purpose in your choices around your varieties?
We're trying to save varieties that aren't readily commercially available, and also preserve some of the standards that my relatives used to grow, like Jacob's Cattle and Marifax dry beans. This state used to do really well with dry beans and wheat production, which is another crop that we're toiling with, developing some heirloom wheat varieties.
I've been hearing that it's been a lot wetter in the summer in Maine, and that, like, even hay, well, especially coastal Maine, maybe it's different in central Maine, but that August has had just a lot more precipitation. If you're talking about your people and your family and your family land, is that a weather conversation that you've had?
I've noticed it getting, like, prolonged springs, yeah. I don't really know, though, if that's just random or that's going to be the trend. It is difficult in May now to get crops in the ground in a timely fashion because of the rain. But, just global warming is throwing another furball for us, you know?
I thought you said furball, but I think you said curveball.
Curveball.
Yeah, well, I just, as we were talking about wheat and dry beans, and both of those are crops that really do like to have a little drying off time at the end of the season.
Right, yeah. So it's true.
So you said you're linking arms with family, and I wanted to just explore that a little for a second. Were they farming there, or in what way are you linking arms?
Well, I grew up here as a sixth generation Mainer, I guess. My grandfather had an apple orchard, which he had health problems and couldn't maintain it. So while I was growing up, I grew right up the road on the same land. I saw all these heirloom apples everywhere, you know, growing and going by. And we would have apple fights, but we didn't know anything about farming, you know. I grew up with two older brothers and a cousin, and I don't know, I think when you grow up in the country, it's hard to leave, so you try to make it work, and that's what we're trying to do, is try to put the land back into production so that we can live here comfortably. Fortunately, I didn't have any access to my family's land, but Maria, her family had a field that was just abandoned and bush hog for probably 50 years. So it had a whole mess of problems with it. I think the acidity was around 5.5. I don't know if, I guess most people wouldn't understand what that means, but for vegetables, you want neutral pH, and takes a lot of lime to bring that up in a good number of years to bring it back around to a neutral pH. That's what
we've
been doing.
Or you could plant a bunch of blueberries.
Or we could be blueberry farmers, but I had no history of blueberry farming. All my experience has been on vegetable farms, organic vegetable farms, and I've had a couple of years' experience on a seed farm, so stick to what you know, I guess. You know?
So you stuck to what you knew, and how much lime did you put down?
How much, what was that again?
How much lime?
Oh, each year we put down about six tons, about a ton to the acre. So, and it makes a difference, big difference.
And have you watched it come down?
Oh, yeah, every year we do soil tests, and it's really incredible, actually. It's incredible to see how much organic matter was there when we first started. You know, if you think of a field just doing its natural process, growing out and then just getting cut and going back to the soil every year, for a long number of years, it'll build up a lot of organic matter, which is really good for your biodiversity of soil organisms, micro and macro organisms. So, and that's kind of what we would like to be able to do with the farm, is to just incorporate all of our organic matter every year and feed life, but that doesn't really, pay the bills. So you gotta harvest.
But if you're growing seed, you could argue that's the most efficient way of keeping the majority of your carbon, at least, on the farm, and just exporting the genetic portions of the, you know, the gonads of the plant.
Right. No, that is good. Yeah, we do put a lot of our plant matter right back into the ground, so it does.
For those who are maybe considering doing seed, who are maybe doing vegetable CSA or looking for another enterprise to add? Well, first of all, seed growing contract, how that figures in and what the advantages and disadvantages are to that, and then how the business of selling seed compares to the business of selling your own seed.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, we're toying with the idea of adding more, but right now the way things are is we have one full-time person, and that's me, and kind of a part-time person, Maria, and our system right now works great, where she's doing most of the wholesale contacts for our vegetables, the fresh vegetables, and she's been doing a farmer's market, so that has taken a lot of weight off of the production end, like the field work and the harvesting. I can just focus on field work and harvesting, and then, you know, and then she takes care of the sales end, so it really helps out that way to have things lined up like that. As far as seed sales go, right now we just have a small catalog and everything is mail order, so I take care of that in the spring and I do all the, I would say the biggest part of our seed catalog is all the packing and the making of the seed packets. You know, we do everything. We make the seed packet design, and we put the description on the back. So really, when you're getting our seed, you're getting something that's totally unique to us. We didn't send off to get them printed off somewhere. We did them on our Mac and printed them off our printer, so in that way we have a really unique garden product, I would say. And for the wholesale seed, that's pretty decent, but it's really risky. You get a couple of crops from a company, and they'll send you the stock seed, and hopefully you do everything right and get your split plant spacing right, and hopefully everything works out that it produces a large amount of that one thing. But if it doesn't, then something happens. that's that, you know. Very risky. So
if it doesn't come out, you have to pay for the stock seed, or just you can't count on the income if it doesn't meet their specs? Or explain that a little bit.
I'm not sure yet, actually, because I haven't had a crop failure till this year, so I'll be finding out in a month or so on what if I have to pay for the stock seed or not.
What went wrong?
Oh, what went wrong this season? I ended up with rust in my gas tank in my tractor, and that put me back probably 2 weeks in May, right when you need the tractor. And so a lot of my cropping, my planting got all pushed back. So some of those crops just never got in the ground. It was probably taking on too much and not having an apprentice or help. So it can really make you feel like you're just out doing a whole lot of nothing, you know?
Had tractor problems in May is like the first phase. It's like the first room of hell or something.
I think so. Yeah. It was a pretty tough year. we pulled
through. Also, there was something you mentioned there that I thought would work, was bore a little more exploration, and that is the division of labor on the farm, and that you have discrete roles that are your roles, and that your wife has roles that are her roles. I'm going into relationship and this next growing season, a growing partnership with someone else, and we're like divvying up the roles exactly as you're saying, and it's really great. I'm feeling very good about it, and especially if it's a negotiated thing. Did you guys have a conscious negotiation period, or did that just kind of come about without any talking?
Yeah, that just came about. I think it was just random. I think she actually asked if I needed help or where I needed help, and I think I asked her if she could do the market, and she said yes, and then the next week I asked her again, and she said yes again. So it just evolved with us. We're very kind of on the ground, just trying to make things work, you know. And plans are great and everything. I've planned a lot and seen plans go right out the window. So I try not to build up my expectations too high, you know.
So where I met you at was the Moscow Common Ground Fair, and I know that there was just the main grower-to-grower conference, but I wanted to just check in on what are your other sources of inspiration, allies, and resources. What are the networks that you're using, especially in your seed work?
Let's see. I guess inspiration for me comes, you know, trying to live in a just society that everybody pays the costs for the products they buy. And I feel like there are all these costs of cheap food and, you know, cost cheap materials that are hurting the rest of the world, and if we don't want to pay those costs, then somebody has to, you know. So I don't know. I feel there's a lot of pain in the world, so I try to gain inspiration from that.
So that means I guess you're saying that one of the big motivations for you in pursuing the life that you lead has to do with social justice or causing less harm in the world or modeling good behavior.
Yeah, like that bumper sticker, think globally, act locally. I guess I don't really attune to any group or anything. I'm just trying to do what's right in my community and try not to exploit anything or anyone in the process.
Do you think people notice? Do people say
know.
Something?
Maybe not. Yeah, they will.
There's a bunch of seed growers up in the Pacific Northwest who are really into open pollinated varieties and Pacific Northwest adapted varieties, a lot of Northern European root vegetables and that kind of stuff. And they're really clear about, and there's about six new companies up there. I love to make sure that you know about them and that they know about you and you guys could meet up, but, or at least talk on the phone sometime. But, you know, they see their businesses really as a direct action around the problem of injustice that they've identified, which is a corporate control and monopolistic control by particular companies like Monsanto in the seed supply, and even in vegetable seeds and the mother companies of vegetable seed providers. I don't know if you're, if seeds have that meaning for you as it has for them, or what you think about that.
Yeah, definitely. GMOs have been a concern. There's, you know, there's a lot of problems with tampering with our genetics and just letting it out into nature to see what happens. And yeah, I don't know. I guess for us, we're just trying to get things back onto a scale that's real. You know, everything is so big. Like, how can a company be too big to fail? I don't know. Or, you know, how can oil companies be making so much oil off something that is kind of owned by everybody? I wish I could just, you know, put ocean water in a bottle and sell it for $4 a gallon. You know, but that doesn't seem right. But I don't know why people aren't being reimbursed for all the negative impacts of other people's wealth. I think that is a conscious thing that's happening now, that people need to be reimbursed for all this degradation.
I like that idea of young people being reimbursed for all the degradation of their elders.
Yeah, me too. I just heard it like a week ago on the radio. I think it was on Democracy Now. It was this thing called climate inheritance, and how, you know, we were born into this world. We inherit our surroundings. What we can and can't do with them is directly related to, you know, what the older generation had either taken or not taken. So, and there seems
to be how totally unquestioned in our society and in our economy it is for those who have to ruthlessly extract and to, you know, use their power and use their money and spend it how they like and wreak havoc for the long term at the expense of the long term for the short. And it's so weird and strange that that would be acceptable behavior.
Right. It is very, it's just frustrating.
Yeah, it seems almost inconsistent with many of the other values of our civilization.
Right. Yep.
Yep. So if people are interested to order your seeds, this is the time of year when folks start thinking that way.
Yeah.
How do they find you?
We have a website called Groundswell Seed Farm. And currently, you can send in your order with your return address and either a check or a money order. And then we'll mail out your order within the day or the next day. We try to do it fast. But as soon as we get PayPal, it'll be more accessible for people, I think. Look out for...
Well, but, you know, everybody can go to the post office and get a money order.
Sure, yeah. But I think most people
are... I'm not saying poo-poo to PayPal. I'm a big PayPal friend. They're my pal. But, you know, that is a nice service that the Postal Service offers, and they don't charge very much for it. I don't think they charge anything for it, actually.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I cherish that free thing. I really thank you for your time. I wanted to make sure to remind you and to remind our listeners that we Greenhorns have a new publication coming out. If you liked our book of 50 Essays by Young Farmers, you will love our almanac. It's called the 2013 New Farmers Almanac. It's 320 pages long, highly illustrated, with useful and entertaining information for those farmers and others who are dealing practically with the unknown. There is a calendar, zodiac calendar, and kind of biodynamic planting calendar embedded in there, although there are no predictions about the weather. So now you know, you can order it from us by sending check or money order to the Greenhorn, P.O. Box 13, Hudson, New York, 12534. Okie dokie. Mike, I thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe you.
I'll see you next year at Common Ground Fair.
All right, thank you. It was nice talking with you.
Okay, everybody, thanks for joining us. Tune in next week for more Radio by Young Farmers. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.